Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health-related from your mouth to your toes.
So, grab your flossy flops
and slide on some flippy floppies.
And let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite sisters. The Ginger Sisters. Hello, Dr. Sanders. How are you today?
Oh gosh, I'm so good. And I'm so glad I'm seeing you. And I'm really excited for today's episode.
Oh, you know what?
Me too. Since we just got back from your wedding and matters of the heart, maybe we should talk about the heart. By the way, your wedding was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Speaking from, you know, alongside the person who officiated this magnificent, massive wedding, congratulations to you, Dr. Sanders, on an amazing, what was Uncle Kevin calling you? Your honor?
Yes, he was calling me your honor. And he bowed every time I walked into
bowed.
The room.
I can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Uncle Kevin is the, speaking of cardiovascular disease risk. So yes, thank you so much. And what a wonderful way to introduce February and the national month that we focus on cardiovascular disease, that heart muscle, how incredibly important it is. And of course, I'm so excited to bring on this incredible woman to discuss this heavy topic, because we know that cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of women. And so it is important that we have this dialogue. So I want to welcome to the podcast the incredible Dr. Ellie Campbell. Dr. Campbell is a board-certified doctor in family medicine. She also is trained at, not only at the Medical College of Georgia, but also Bale Doneen. We know that Dr. Bradley Bale and Amy Doneen really have well-positioned themselves inside of a terrific conversation around cardiovascular disease health, and they really are terrific stewards for that oral systemic component. She also, and this is what I'm really excited to talk about today, she also is an expert in cardiovascular risk reduction. So as a dental hygienist, like, that is speaking my language. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Campbell. It is such a delight to have you.
Welcome.
Well, thank you, ladies. It's an honor to be here with you today. And right after you got married too, we'll talk about your heart and we'll talk about everybody's heart.
Yes.
Well, I love that, because I'm sure you're going back to the whole, Bale Doneen has data in their preceptorship about women's risk for cardiovascular disease after they've gotten married versus women's cardiovascular disease risk if they've never been married. And it's quite different from men's cardiovascular disease risk if they're married versus if they're not, and all of that. So just very, very interesting. But before we get to the pleasantries of it, I do need to give you, Dr. Campbell, a hearty congratulations on the publish of your amazing book. This book, The Blood Pressure Blueprint, is really an incredible overview of looking at holistic approaches to looking at hypertension. We know that there are so many unique risk factors associated with cardiovascular disease, but as a true expert, why did you start with the conversation around hypertension?
I started with hypertension because, for me, Bale Doneen was a gateway drug. Bale Doneen was my first introduction to the oral and systemic connection. And the deeper I dove into that particular entity of how the mouth was connected to the body, for the first time in my career, I was able to not have heart attacks in my office. For 7 years, since I've been following the Bale Doneen method and teaching my patients and empowering them with the information, which is in their book and my book, we have not had any heart attacks or strokes in anybody that follows the program for 7 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
So
that's
now fantastic. I truly believe that heart attacks are optional, strokes are stoppable, and dialysis is not your destiny. No cardiovascular prevention program is complete without a medical professional, a dentist, and a hygienist on the team. And if you're willing to get the tests and do the work, you will not succumb to the number one killer in our country.
Oh my God. I just like have goosebumps. I
love
all of
when
you listening
say
to
that.
This right now, just yeah. Like if you're driving, like everyone's driving to work, like got to pull over and have a little cry. Like that is so powerful and so profound and such
well,
an important
empowering.
Thing.
That's what I like yes. about it is I think that so many patients feel like my grandfather had a heart attack,
yes.
my father had a heart attack, my mother died of a stroke, I'm doomed, there's nothing I can do. And that nothing could be farther from the truth. And that lifestyle changes, therapeutic lifestyle changes, orders of magnitude more powerful than any drug or supplement that I could pull off my shelf. Mm. And so when you learn those things and you learn the blood biomarkers that are indicative of oxidative stress and inflammation that are driving these metabolic pathways, and you learn how to read your own lab report, and you know that if you eat too many burgers and french fries, your F2 isoprostate is going up and now you're in trouble. Your blood vessels are in trouble. You're going to be at risk. And you're like, oh, I can make those correlations. I can be in charge of this train. I can build the tracks and drive the train. And it doesn't have to be straight down the path to cardiovascular disease or stroke.
You know, that's really important that you say that, because I oftentimes, as a dental professional, hear that genetic pathway in my patients in a different way. They'll say things like, well, my mom and dad were in dentures by the time they were 40, and I'm 42 and I'm doing pretty good. Almost as if they've acknowledged or convinced themselves that this is their destiny too. And I think there's an important aspect there inside of recognizing that genetics certainly is a component, a non-modifiable risk factor for our patients, but it's not the only risk factor. And I think the other side of this then becomes, how do we become better advocates for our patients inside of this new world? Before we hit record, we were just talking about how patients are excited to advocate for themselves, or they want to better understand how to take care of themselves. But now we're in this information consumption world where, you know, depending on what blog you read, fat is bad for you. Well, then you recognize we've got fat soluble vitamins, and you actually do need healthy fats in order to protect your organs and things like that. So not all fat is bad. And then you look at, you know, it's sedentary lifestyle versus, you know, what kind of exercise and cardiovascular, you know, high intensity cardiovascular exercise versus yoga. And so you recognize now that we are in a world where people are sharing information. It's so easy to listen to a podcast. It's so easy to, you know, get a book on Amazon. And by the way, friends, check out our show notes so that you can see the link to Dr. Ellie Campbell's new book, The Blood Pressure Blueprint, The Holistic Guide to Defeating Hypertension. That link is in the show notes. You all have to check it out. But it's so easy to capture all of this information now. And I think people are doing a lot of like almost self-medicating without being precise about what makes most sense for them. So where do you begin when a patient comes into your practice and you start the process of that cardiovascular risk component?
Yeah. So first of all, we start with their goals and their expectations, right? Because if they're going to come and see me and hope in 1 month to have their blood pressure controlled, their blood sugar controlled, their body at ideal weight, and they're not going to be at risk, and we want to do this in 4 weeks, that's not realistic. So we start with expectations and goals. You know, it starts with vital signs. So the person who walks into my office, the first thing that we do is take vital signs. And I've teased my staff. Vital signs are vital. We need to get them at every visit. And it warms my heart to see that more and more dentists and hygienists are also checking vital signs. But you know what? Most of us do it wrong. And that's a big part of the first chapters in my book, is we're looking at the mistakes that I made as a healthcare professional, not following the latest guidelines from the American Heart Association, the Centers for Disease Control, on the proper way to check blood pressure. Tip number one, your bladder has to be empty. Mm. When you measure your blood pressure, you need to empty your PE. If your bladder is full, you can raise your blood pressure 10 to 30 millimeters of mercury. And if it's painfully full, that elevation of blood pressure can persist for 6 hours.
Wow.
I have a colleague who does prostate surgeries for men who have enlarged prostates. And he remarked that after he heard my lecture, that now I understand why treating men's prostate that's causing them to have urinary retention lowers their blood pressure. After wow. we're done, almost all male patients will see a blood pressure come down somewhere between 5 and 20 points after they're done with their prostate procedure. He goes, I didn't realize holding extra urine in the bladder put a physiologic stress that can raise your blood pressure. And in my office, I'm a family practice doctor, so we often get a blood pressure, I mean, a urine sample from our patients. Mm-hmm. And the medical staff assistants would say, wait, wait, let's go check your vital signs. We'll get your weight, your height, your blood pressure. And then I'll send you to the bathroom.
Yes. Sure.
Right. That's the wrong order. We need to send them to the bathroom to empty first, because mm-hmm. they knew we were going to need a pee specimen, and they drove all the way up Georgia 400.
Yeah. With the Starbucks in their bladder. Water,
knowing they needed to pee, and we're telling them to wait and hold it.
Yeah.
So this gives us an opportunity to lower their blood pressure by many points and get it more optimal just mm-hmm. by emptying their bladder. The next thing is, I'm not sure, I think like me are somewhat vertically impaired, right? We don't run really tall.
Elizabeth is a little bit.
Is tall, yeah.
So I'm only 5'1".
You're 5'1"?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so small but mighty. Most medical offices in the chair, I cannot sit in a chair with my bottom to the bottom, my back to the back, and mm-hmm. my feet on the floor at the same time. This is a position that's mandatory to get a normal blood pressure reading. So I have never in my life been offered a step stool to sit to rest my feet on when I get my blood pressure checked. But now we have a stool in my office, and we offer this to patients who are short like I am. We should never check our blood pressures while we're seated in the dental chair, lying down, or we're sitting on an exam table with our feet dangling, because dangling feet can raise your blood pressure 10 points.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So what about a dental? So my patients sit in the chair and they'll cross their ankles. Mm-hmm. And we were always taught in hygiene school to tell them to uncross their ankles because it adjusts the circulation and all of that. But their feet are not planted flat on the floor. So is it okay if their back
Is it possible in a dental chair to reposition them so their feet can be on the floor for their blood pressure? If not, you need to check their blood pressure not in the reclining chair, but in the seat that's also in the exam room.
That's what they do at like the OBGYN's office. That's why they do it there or what. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. If you lower your seat enough, maybe you could, because that's, could, we have similar seats to you.
They can like almost straddle the chair. They could do that. So, okay.
Back to the back, feet on the floor.
Feet on the floor.
Yep.
Huh. Okay. Yep. Wow. Okay. I honestly... Yeah. Every dental professional listening to this, with the exception of like maybe Michelle Hudson, Hudson Hoover, I'm sorry, she just got married too. I think every dental professional is like, oh my gosh, we've been doing this incorrectly. This is crazy. Okay. So that's the second one.
Yeah. The next one is chit-chatting.
Yeah. They like to do that. They like
supposed
to do that.
To zip it, 5 minutes of silence. And that includes active listening. You know, in our medical offices, we have really interesting conversations.
Yeah.
That you can hear through the wall next to you if you're paying attention.
Uh-huh.
Well, active listening as well as talking can raise your blood pressure 5 to 10 points. So we want it quiet. We don't want the chit chat. We want people settled and quiet. It's been a bit of a challenge for my receptionist because we don't generally have a long wait in my office. And so the receptionist is not supposed to talk to the patients in the waiting room, because we need 5 minutes of quiet. And if they're not going to wait 5 minutes, then we need them Get them in the, get them to the bathroom, empty their bladder, sit them in the chair, bottom to bottom, feet on the floor, back to the back. And then we check their blood pressure. No crossed legs. You're correct about that. That's another error. Another one is not using the right size blood pressure cuff or not supporting the arm. Many people in today's day and age, unfortunately, carry extra body fat. And when we have a choice between a small, large, or a thigh cuff, many people are sort of in between the large and the thigh cuff. And so we use the thigh cuff because we know the large is not going to fit. But the thigh cuff is, I'm 5 feet tall. You think my femur
is
as long as my humerus?
Yeah, it looked like you have those pool floaties on.
Right. So Welch Allyn actually makes something called a large long cuff. So it's the width of a large cuff, but it's extra long. So it can get around
all the way around
these, you know, little flabby things that we have hanging off the bottom of our arms. So we can wrap the cuff around that and get an accurate blood pressure. So for most of us, that means a special order to Welch Allyn or whoever provides our blood pressure cuffs to get that fourth size cuff. So we have a small, a medium, a small, a large, a thigh, and a large long cuff. And that can help get more accurate readings. And you have to support the arm at heart level. It should not be dangling. It should not be lifted up over their head. Should be supported at heart level. And if you do those things, and there's a little graphic, you can get it, you can download it from the CDC if you want to post it in your operatory. It's in my book, you can print it off if you want it, but it's also available CDC. And it really helps to keep us all on track so that we're all doing our same blood pressure the same way. Because nobody wants to be diagnosed with hypertension who doesn't really have it.
No, yeah.
Right, and about 10 to 20% of people have white coat hypertension. So they don't have high blood pressure at home, but they do in the office. And so having them learn the proper ways to check their blood pressures at home gives them the opportunity to be the most accurate with their data collection at home. And we now are using home blood pressure monitoring much more aggressively in the treatment of hypertension, just like we are for diabetes, right?
Yeah.
What kind of doctor would I be if I checked your blood sugar in my office and used that one reading to decide your insulin level for the next 3 months until you saw me again? That's a ridiculous thing to do. And so we're now learning the same about blood pressure. We don't make a diagnosis with one reading. We get a string of them at good times, at bad times, at stress times, at rest times, at hungry times, at full times, and see what your trends are over time. And if you don't have high blood pressure at home, you don't need to be treated. The flip side of that is some people have masked hypertension. And masked hypertension is the people who are really good about putting their bodies into Zen mode when they're in the doctor's office, but then they go home and they fly off the handle and they have high blood pressure all the time at home. But in the office, they look calm, cool, and collected. And so those people would get fooled too, right? We would think, oh, your blood pressure is beautiful. You don't need any. But in reality, they too need to be checking their blood pressures at home. So.
Wow. So I want to just call this out for the dental professionals. First of all, the vast majority of us are taking blood pressure incorrectly. Dental people.
So like Most of us are in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is incredible. Now, I will say the one nice thing about dentistry is that I think very few of our patients have a full bladder because we are always running behind because the patient always comes in and says they have to use the restroom first. So I think we're okay there. But here's the other piece of it. 10 to 20% of individuals who do have hypertension, it's a white coat syndrome situation. And I will tell you, one of the biggest frustrations that we have in dentistry is we will take a blood pressure on a patient. And first of all, dental peeps, put yourselves into this position because we've all been there. You hook the patient up with the device. You're going to take the patient's blood pressure and the patient makes a comment. Oh, wow. I didn't know that you guys did this kind of stuff in here. So they'll say that first, right? It's like, okay, here we go. Then you get, whether it's stage one, stage two, whatever it is, you get a hypertensive reading. And you explain to the patient, this is an area of concern. This is where we want you. This is where you are. And then the patient says, yeah, I have white coat. And they say it just like that. And it sounds dismissive. So my first question to you is, what is the next best step or way that I, as a dental professional, can approach a patient who says that? Because what I'll tell you what my lizard brain is thinking. Well, now my brain is thinking I'm probably taking that patient's blood pressure incorrectly. So I need to do it the correct way. That's what I'm thinking now. But before we had this conversation, what my brain was thinking is, you're just making an excuse because mm-hmm. you don't want me to refer you back to your doctor to look at this. That's so how do I navigate that as a provider? How do I, because there are some patients that when they say that, they say it like, well, my doctor has told me that.
Right.
But respectfully, there are physicians who will actively monitor a patient who is sick.
Right.
There are physicians that are okay with a patient's A1C just being like 12 all the time. And they're like, oh yeah, that's normal for you. And I have a hard time accepting that with my patients. Yes. So these are the things that's the narrative I'm telling myself.
Yeah.
How do I navigate that?
That's probably a whole spectrum of people across the board. But I think your first comeback would be, oh, you have white coat. What was your last blood pressure reading at home?
Okay.
Right. So I have something to compare it to and say, well, if you have white coat hypertension, then if you have one reading that's this high in my office, I need to see at least 10 normal readings from home. Do you have those with you?
Oh, that's so good. Because no patient's going to say yes, except for like the ones that have those Oura rings or, you know, whatever. Right. Maybe they'll be. Yeah. Wow.
And as far as I'm concerned, the wearables are not yet ready for prime time for blood pressure readings.
So I was going to ask you about that, especially wrist cuffs.
Starting to get there, but I don't think they're there. I don't think we're ready for prime time.
It's not as accurate. Wrist cuffs. Where are we?
15 or whatever.
Yeah. Where are we with wrist cuffs? Any of those?
I don't like wrist cuffs much either. It's better than nothing, but I wouldn't make therapeutic decisions based on a wrist cuff. I still want old fashioned arm.
We could screen with a wrist cuff.
You could probably screen with a wrist cuff.
But
and there is a lot of controversy too. Like when a patient comes to you and they're a known hypertensive and they did or they didn't take their blood pressure medicine that morning and you're about to do a big dental procedure on them and their blood pressure is 180 over 110 and they have no symptoms, do you abort the procedure, right? Or can you proceed? And there's a lot of controversy about this and there's no right answer. But I would say that I have in my book for you hygienists, 3 or 4 different strategies that are instant within 5 minute lower your blood pressure strategies. So if you can do a 5 minute meditation, if you can do some breath work, Navy SEALs practice.
Yeah, the SEALs breathing. Yeah.
Wow, yes.
Breathe in for 5 seconds.
The box 4 breathing.
Seconds, hold for 4, out for 4, hold for 4, in, out, in, hold, out, hold, in, out, in, hold, out, hold. And that literally shifts your parasympathetic nervous system to get into gear and lowers your blood pressure. Humming or gargling, but not singing, will also activate your vagus nerve, stimulate your parasympathetic nervous system, and bring you down, your blood pressure down a few points.
I love that.
So if you can spend 5 minutes to get your patient's blood pressure down 20 points, now you're not feeling so panicked and can proceed with your procedure. You know, the guidelines tell us that if our blood pressure is above 180 over 110 and you have symptoms, that's a 911 emergency. Mm-hmm. We need to call in the ambulance, right? If you have chest pain, shortness of breath, blurry vision, your face is asymmetric, you can't smile symmetrically. These are stroke symptoms. These are hypertensive crises. And so 180 over 120 or higher is our target for that. And that's a call the ambulance. Now, there are people that walk around 180 over 120 all the time.
All the time, yes.
And so that's kind of a different animal. Those people require long-term management. And you don't want to drop their blood pressure to 120 over 80 in 5 minutes. They'll feel terrible and pass out on you. So that's a long-term management issue. But statistically, most patients won't be in that high of a category and you'll be able to proceed with your dental procedure if you just take them through some breath work, meditation, or there's some acupressure points as well. There's one that's on the tip of your long finger, the middle of the middle finger. And if you use a ink pen with the ink retracted and press on that, for about 5 minutes, you can sometimes lower the blood pressure. That's a Chinese acupressure point. And there's another one on the top of the foot that Dr. Sanders probably knows about.
I don't.
You don't know about it?
No. Well, you're seeing it.
Yeah, so it's called the liver three spot. And you can look it up on any acupressure chart. And it's in my book as well, of where you can use that same stick and use a little massage on that pressure point, and it will lower your blood pressure.
This is great. I can just do that as I'm talking to my patients.
Yes.
And lower their blood
reduce
pressure.
It. That's why my blood pressure reduces when I'm getting a pedicure. That's probably why.
Yeah, that's probably why. We should prescribe pedicures for everybody with hypertension.
Yes.
I love that. I just love all these things that you're mentioning about just a holistic approach in general. And I know that's a really big thing that you bring to your practice. I saw one of your interviews, and when you talked about, you said that everyone thinks, you know, it's all about cholesterol and of course blood pressure, and that prescribing a medication or giving, you know, something to help lower our cholesterol is going to be kind of a magic cure. And it just spoke to me when I heard you say something like that. Because it's true. How many patients come in and it's just kind of a gut reaction to, oh, I need to control your cholesterol. I need to give you a medication to help control it. And you said, no, it's not all about cholesterol. It's about inflammation.
Right. I think we barked up the wrong tree for a long time with cholesterol. And in fact, we now know that atherosclerosis is the driving force, the buildup of plaque. And remember, like, we've got plaque in three places we commonly think about, right? Plaque on our teeth, plaque in our arteries, plaque in our brains. It's all kind of the same stuff, right? Yeah. It's proteinaceous biofilm, activated blood cells, and trash, right? And it's all in those different places. And it can lead to Alzheimer's disease. It can lead to dental gum disease. And it can lead to atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries in our blood vessels that cause heart attack and stroke. But that driver, it's not cholesterol that does that. Cholesterol doesn't clog those arteries. Cholesterol is implicated when it becomes corrupted. So healthy cholesterol is good for us. We need it to make cell membranes. We need it to make hormones and vitamin D and bile, right? We need cholesterol. But just like teenagers, right? Well-behaved teenagers are welcome in my house. Corrupted teenagers got no business near my kids.
And take your Tamagotchi and go.
Cholesterol is the same. Well-behaved cholesterol is a necessary molecule. Mm-hmm. Corrupted cholesterol is a different animal. When it becomes corrupted because it's sugar-coated or glycated, because it's oxidized or rusted, or because it's the wrong shape or size, now it's a whole different animal. And now we need to pull out all our reserves to get those cholesterol molecules uncorrupted, because believe it or not, people with the highest cholesterol live the longest. As long as it's not corrupted, people with the highest cholesterol live the longest. We don't want to lower cholesterol. We want to get rid of corrupted cholesterol. And we want to make sure that the arteries are not inflamed, because when there's oxidative stress that's rusting those cell membranes and making them shaggy and irritated and inflamed, and there's inflammatory cytokines running through the bloodstream and too much cortisol and all this inflammatory gunk in the arteries, now that corrupted cholesterol gets trapped behind the drywall, makes us black, and we have trouble. So if we can lower oxidative stress and we can lower inflammation and we uncorrupt our cholesterol, you're not going to have a heart attack or a stroke. I've seen it for 7 years in my practice.
Wow. The imagery of the rusting of the endothelial lining of a blood vessel is just so incredible. Because, I mean, when you, as a clinician, when you think about it that way, it's like this, that is how atherosclerotic disease occurs, right? Is through that, like, the porosity, however you want to call it, the ability for these plaques to be able to form within that. It's amazing. And I imagine you loved going through that preceptorship. I completed my preceptorship last year, but Bill Doneen talks so much about all of those different complexities of cholesterols and why it's important and how we need to get very clear about it. So what do you, or what have you started to integrate as a medical, you know, physician, instead of, you know, here are your cholesterol readings, how do you get very clear about that with a patient and decide what the best course of action is depending on what their cholesterol reading is telling you?
Well, I'll tell you the linchpin that really flipped my ability to get these results was using the blood markers from Boston Heart Diagnostics or Cleveland Heart Lab, and being able to have pattern recognition so that we could identify where the problem lies. And case after case after case after case, the source of the patient's inflammation that's causing the rusting of the inside of their arteries is their mouth. It is either undiagnosed, untreated sleep apnea, periodontal disease, endodontic infection.
Endodontic care,
Over and over and
Isn't that interesting?
And so when I see, so for example, we do this that I learned about through Bale Dineen called the fire pan. We look at myeloperoxidase and LPPLA2, high sensitivity C-reactive protein and oxidized LDL. These are fire markers. They're markers that your body is on fire. Myeloperoxidase is an enzyme that's made in white blood cells. And we mostly see it when the plaque is rupturing, but we also see it in the base of endodontic tooth lesions. So when I see somebody who has elevated myeloperoxidase on their bloodstream, I know, or on their blood test, I know that they're at very high risk for having a significant event if I can't get that under control very quickly. And I will never get it under control if they have a growing abscess at the bottom of their tooth root that's got a root canal in it that they don't even feel because the nerve has been pulled out of that tooth. So when I see those MPO elevations, I get straight to the dentist within 1 week for a cone beam CAT scan. And 9 out of 10 times, there's a pus pocket and that tooth needs attention. Extraction. And when I do that, myeloperoxidase drops like a rocket. We removed that risk and the patient has no event. So secondly, LPPLA2. This is a marker that we see from, and that stands for lipoprotein-associated phospholipase A2. And it's an enzyme and it's found in the blood vessel wall, but it's also found in gum tissue. And so when I see elevated LPPLA2 and an elevated high sensitivity C-reactive protein, which indicates inflammation, that's periodontal disease until proven otherwise. And it's been shocking to me how many times I send a patient to the dentist with those biomarkers and they come back and they say, oh, I only have a little bleeding. My pockets are only 5 and I'm fine. I'm no worse than I was the last time. Oh. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do a spit test and see if we can identify some of these ugly marker bacteria. Because if you have these ugly bacteria, then it's not okay. And we either need to get a second opinion from a different dentist that has a
better
little
probing technique, education,
you know, has a different education. You came to see me because I have different education than the other family practitioners down the block. But let's find a dentist for you that has a little bit different education, because, you know, Porphyromonas gingivalis is a really bad actor. And it has this nasty habit of hitching a ride on a white blood cell and then going through your bloodstream and landing somewhere else, very far away from your mouth. While wherever it sits, PG bacteria makes phosphorylated dihydroceramide. This is a wax, this is a plaque. PG bacteria makes its own plaque.
Isn't that amazing?
It makes plaque in your gums, it makes plaque in your brain, it makes plaque in your arteries. And those little suckers will get into your bloodstream. When I do a carotid ultrasound test on somebody and I see a significant difference in the amount of plaque blockage on one side versus the other, there is almost always PG and there is almost always one tooth that's a problem on the thicker side where the plaque is. that those bacteria are getting into the bloodstream, getting into the lymphatics, burying down into the tissue, and causing inflammation.
What you mean to say that you can do a carotid scan and you can almost distill down the tooth is going to be on that.
I can't tell if it's upper or lower, but it's going to be.
You know, it's going to be on that side of the body.
Yep. Isn't that wild? That is unbelievable.
I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. That's where the blood drains to. So you test for P. gingivalis. Who else? What other little critters do you test for on the salivary diagnostic side?
Yeah, I look for AA, PG, TD, TF, and FN.
FN, TD. Yeah. Okay.
And then sometimes we'll use, and that's the HR5 test. Yeah. And sometimes we use oral DNA, and they test other four that are not quite as aggressive.
You know, they play
on the playground, right? Like FN is like kids on the playground. When
it can be nice.
Kids are out, FN is perfectly fine. But when the bad kids are out, FN goes and plays.
That's right.
it's going to become a bad actor too, just like those corrupted teenagers, right? Yeah. So FN swings both ways. And so we don't always have to worry about it. But I'm a family practice doctor. I'm not a dentist. I don't know how to treat these bacteria in the mouth. I don't want to learn how to treat these bacteria in the mouth. That's what I need my hygienists and my dentists for. But I need them all over Atlanta because my patients come from all over Atlanta and far away. And so I need to have a huge referral network of like-minded dentists and hygienists who have been educated and know the meaning of these tests. When I do this fire panel and I see these markers are elevated and I send the patient, they don't think I'm crazy for requesting a CBCT. Or when I send the patient with their carotid ultrasound, their blood markers and their coronary calcium score, and I say, this patient has a dental problem, please help me find it. They're going to find it. They're going to keep digging and digging and digging until they do find it. Cause sometimes they're subtle and sometimes they're hard to find. And sometimes it's just one tooth. Right. Sometimes it's the whole mouth is trash, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot easier for us to find if it is the whole mouth. If it's just a localized area, sometimes that is hard for us to find.
But it can be just as culprit. So,
yeah. You know, you are such a wealth of knowledge. I love this. And I think this is the kind of conversation that needs to be normalized from colleague to colleague. I hope any of our listeners in the Atlanta, Georgia area that you consider establishing a professional relationship alongside Dr. Ellie Campbell, because what a terrific way to have a resource to be able to create that closed loop referral system. But as we wrap up for this episode for today, I'm wondering, on the dental professional side, we actually have challenges with creating our own network. I always say dentistry is kind of like, you know, the little yappy chihuahua that just like, what about me? What about me? What about me? You know, and medicine, like, you know, if Dr. Sanders was practicing in Atlanta, Georgia, you two probably would have interacted. You would have collaborated on patients. You would have rounded together.
Vascular disease is a huge
problem. That's right. Yep.
Exactly.
I don't want her cutting any toes off of any of my patients.
That's right. There you go. So you're all interacting together. You're all collaborating. You're looking at the same chart together. You're maybe having discussions about this, you know, medication is better. Let's move them off of this statin. You know, you're all collaborating as a team. You're rounding as a team. Dentistry is its own separate thing. We don't get your charts. We don't see, we're waiting for the patient to give us the list that's folded up in their wallet that has the list of medications that have been crossed out and changed dosages 18 times. So you can barely read the darn thing. And we're waiting for the patient to report to us whether they have this, that, or the other thing. I can't tell you how many times I've asked a patient any significant changes to your medical history and they'll say no. And I do the entire hygiene visit. Doctor comes in at the end and the patient is like, oh yeah, I did have a heart attack like 3 weeks ago, you know? And so just those things that we're waiting for patient report. So we've got this very bizarre extension that I know you've interacted with clinicians in the AASH space. So, you know, we want to be an active part of what's happening in medicine, but we oftentimes feel as though we're missing having that colleague to colleague conversation, or we're missing creating that patient collaborative model. So as we kind of wrap up today's episode, what are some things you would like to see or maybe assignments for dentistry of ways that we can be better partners and collaborators with physicians like yourself?
Well, there's two things I think that are important. Number one is we don't want to underestimate the value of the patient. I think that, you know, if a patient came to me and said, my dentist sent me here because they think I'm at cardiovascular risk, I might ignore that patient. But if 50 patients came to me, then I recognize I better go to a continuing education course. There's mm-hmm. something out there. There's some influencer, podcaster, mm-hmm. somebody who's putting a bug in these patients' ears. I think I need to go up level my education. And so mm-hmm. I think the power of the patient to manifest change in the professionals is not to be underestimated. And so when you learn something as a patient and you want your health professional to be a partner with you in that, don't be shy, right? Speak up about it. And if your professional is not willing to explore those things with you, start searching for other health professionals because there's plenty out there. The second thing is when it comes to interprofessional collaboration, I think the answer is it's really all about relationships. And I think mm-hmm. wine and herbal tea and lunch and cocktails and appetizers at your house or theirs or at a local restaurant is fundamental in creating yes. the relationships. So I want to have my best dentist on speed dial, right? Yeah. I want them to be my friends enough that they know if they're getting a text from me that they want to look at it and answer it pretty close, right? Yeah. Yesterday, I saw a patient. Unfortunately, she had COVID and it developed pulmonary fibrosis. Her lung tissue is scarring down, rapidly getting worse. She's now on oxygen and on the lung transplant list. And I did a home sleep study on her, thinking somebody surely has tested this lady for sleep apnea before she has her lungs transplanted, and nobody had. So her AHI was 0.5. I've never seen such a low AHI.
Her AHI was 0.5.
But she wears 3 liters of oxygen. So she never dropped her sats. She didn't have, but her respiratory distress index was over 15. So she had this huge mismatch suggestive of upper respiratory distress syndrome or upper airway resistance syndrome. Mm. And so so I got on the phone and I texted 3 of my dentist friends. I'm like, okay, anybody know a UARS specialist mm-hmm. who has experience in lung transplants? Like, help me find somebody yeah. somewhere in the country so we have an expert to go to. And in 5 minutes, I had 3 answers. So you need to have them on speed dial. And the mm-hmm. way to get that is to have a relationship. So whether that's getting on the directors of a professional organization, participating in a journal club in your community, going to continuing medical education, and making sure that you are bold enough to walk up to somebody across the aisle, someone who's not a dentist, not a hygienist, not a medical director, a doctor, somebody different from you,
yeah,
and say, can we go have a drink? You're in my community. I need to know what you like to do. What's your skill set? What's your favorite things? What do you want to learn about more? Maybe we could go sit in on the next class together and learn something together so that we can benefit our patients. So I think interprofessional collaboration is really about relationship, and that's fun too.
Yeah. That was just so well said. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it gives context to all of this because dentistry, all of our dental peeps listening, we can't just sit back and wait for the Dr. Ellie Campbells of the world to come over and sit at our little happy hour table. We have the stand up, grab your wine glass and go walk over and go say, hi, I'm Katrina. I'm a periodontal hygienist. I treat patients all the time who have cardiovascular conditions. What is your role in the cardiovascular space? I'd love to talk to you. Oh, you do risk assessment? My goodness, we do an incredible amount of risk assessment. You do salivary diagnosis? We do too. Wow, there's so many things that we could do together. Let's start looking at some collaborative cases. So if I have this kind of a patient, who do I refer to you? How does that work? Let's send letters back and forth. And of course, let's always find the opportunity to grab another glass of wine together. So I think that is the huge piece. And what an incredible message for yes. dentistry. Dr. Campbell, you have been such an incredible wealth of knowledge. I know my colleagues are for sure going to the operatory and changing so much of what they do just foundationally from this conversation. But I want to remind our listeners that really the meat of all of this is whittled down into this gorgeous book published by the incredible Dr. Ellie Campbell, The Blood Pressure Blueprint, The Holistic Guide to Defeating Hypertension. Check out our show notes. You'll see a link there to take you to the Amazon site to order your fresh copy. And I know that Dr. Campbell does a lot of speaking, so feel free to bring your copy to probably the next AOSH conference so she can sign that for you. With that, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been the pleasure of a lifetime. If people wanted to connect with you, Dr. Campbell, how would people connect with you?
Well, if they're free in March, come to Hinman in Atlanta, biggest dental conference in the Southeast. We're doing a 6-hour oral systemic track on Thursday. I'll be lecturing so they can come meet me in person there. On the internet, I'm at CampbellFamilyMedicine.com. I'm at thebloodpressureblueprint.com, and I'm at drelliecampbellspeaker.com if you're interested in having me come speak to your organization. Oh. Because no cardiovascular prevention program is complete without a medical doctor, a dentist, and a hygienist on the team.
Oh, I love that.
You could say that 80 times and we wouldn't get sick of it.
Yes. Oh, I'm just feeling all the feels. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Campbell. I cannot wait to hug you at Hinman this year. It is going to be a blast. And thank you, all of our amazing listeners, for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters. Feel free to join us next month for another episode of Floss and Flip Flops, where we will help you brush up on all things oral systemic.
Oh, we promise to keep you on your toes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.